Okay, I'm Bruce Norris, and with us is Ward Hannigan. Ward is known throughout our industry for foreclosure training, land trust training, owning a company called Innovest, Dingbat Rental Program, and I've just never heard anybody say anything bad about Ward. So, Ward, very, very happy you're part of our panel.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice of you.
You and I had spoken at one, I think I was at a club, either I was speaking or we had just talked, but I kind of asked you what you did before real estate, and so let's start there, you know, what you did prior to being a buyer and an investor.
Well, I worked for IBM for a couple of years after I was recruited on campus, and that got boring, so then I quit, and I bought the A&W Root Beer franchise for Northern Baja California. And then when that sort of petered out, then I became a stockbroker in La Jolla, and I was very successful in that, but very, very ashamed of myself. And so finally I got so ashamed I had to quit, and I went to work for Countrywide in 1970. Countrywide was started in the L.A. area in 1969. They branched out a year later into San Diego, and I answered that cattle call, so to speak, and then I got I was selected for one of two people that handled soliciting loans for Countrywide at different FHA and VA firms in the county. And then from there, I actually quit Countrywide because I was paying peanuts. There was promise of a lot more, but my kids couldn't wait, you know, for clothing or food or anything
right.
else for a lot more sometime in the future. So I called up and talked with Angelo Mazzillo, and because he's the one that hired me in the first place, and told him I had to go on and move on, and wished him all the best of luck, and I was gone, and I went to work for a company that was just starting out in real estate. I did not have a real estate license. So I was brand new to it. It was really a novelty for me. I didn't even own a home at the time, and renting. And so I, but I have a degree in economics. And so when I read this ad and it said that you're going to become a real estate agent buying and selling apartment houses, and I go, wow, that you do based on yield and all that. Oh, that appealed to me. So I answered that ad. Huge number of people showed up, and I felt fortunate to be selected as one of them. And so I did that for 10 years, from 1972 to 1982, about half that time working for a firm, and the other half of the time working for myself. But the last paycheck
okay.
I ever got was in 1972.
Okay, 1972. When you were being raised, what was the expectation? Were you supposed to go to college? Were you supposed to become an entrepreneur? What model was given you, and how did you either follow that model or did you break the mold?
Well, it's going to be a weird answer. I was when I was 4 months old, I was put in an orphanage by my mother. And because she had divorced my father and had to go out and work and save this country during World War II, she says. And so I got out when I was 11. So I thought, this is kind of interesting. A little bit older, I knew that World War II went from 40 to 45, and yet I got out right around the beginning of the Korean War. So I asked her, I said, you know, did the World War II go all the way up to 1951? But anyways, I was being a smart ass. So, no, I didn't get any modeling, mentoring. I didn't have an uncle. I didn't have a grandpa. I didn't have a dad, some male figure that I would have looked up to and followed and you know, drunk everything in my mind that he had said. None of that. But I did have a fantastic experience. Didn't realize it at the time. I was 8 years old, and I had an aunt now in New York that felt sorry for me in an orphanage when she was fairly wealthy and lived in New York. So she decided she would come down and get me and my older brother out of the orphanage for summer. and take us to her other sister, which was in Illinois. And so the way she got there, left Syracuse and drove up through Niagara Falls into Canada and over to Michigan and then down into Illinois. And on that trip, she had a huge Packard convertible. And on that trip, my brother glommed onto, because he was older and more threatening, the whole back seat. And so I sat up in the passenger seat with Aunt May. And as we were driving along, Aunt May and I just talked back and forth, bantering, and I found her a fascinating adult to talk to. I just couldn't believe it. And I could care less about sitting in the back seat where you got, you know, wind in your eyes and you couldn't hear anything and on and on. And so about 2 or 3 days in the trip, I'll remember this to the day I die, my aunt looked at me and she said, "Ward Hannigan, I'm never going to worry about you again.
Wow.
You're going to be very rich someday." And for me, that I didn't doubt that for a second, because Aunt May said it.
Wow.
And it went right into my bone marrow or something, I don't know, never to be expunged. And it was one of the greatest things she could have told me, because of all the tough times I had after that, to me, they were just temporary on my way to becoming rich. And so I could put up with this, and I can put up with that, and on and on and on. And I had no doubt, not one fiber of doubt. I didn't know how I was going to do it. Didn't even think about it. I just knew I was going to be rich. And
That's an unbelievable story. Have you ever told that story to our industry?
No. No, I've never had.
I really appreciate you doing that. She's your first mentor, and I don't know how much time you spent with Aunt May after that, but like you said, you believed what she said.
I believed what she said. When we got to Chicago, she stayed around for a couple more days, and I was just about inseparable from her. She just was absolutely, and she talked to me like an adult. I remember we went to the zoo, the big zoo in Illinois. I used to remember what the name was, and it was sort of cold, and so most of the animals were inside, and there was a rhinoceros in this one building that was taking a leak. And when they urinate, they hit. It goes to the rear. I know you want to know this on tape, right? And it hit this shield, though, this glass shield, so hard that everybody in the building turned around and go, "What made that noise?" And Aunt May and I were separated by about maybe half the building length, and I couldn't believe this hose of urine hitting this shield and splashing all over. And I said, "Aunt May, this rhinoceros is pissing loud." And she, without any pause at all, she said, "Ward, the word is urinating." And
stop
that's
that
the
language.
Kind of person she was. That was the kind of person my Aunt May was. Nothing flustered her. And she was as curious as I was about a lot of things. So, yeah, I was fortunate.
And that happened at 8. Because what you've told me, I mean, you're going to college, you work for IBM, you're a successful stockbroker, on and on and on.
Right.
So being successful, you were given permission to do that at an early age.
Absolutely.
But you weren't shown the model. That's interesting. You've had to create that on your own.
And because of that, I flim-flammed around a lot. It wasn't until I was 42. I hate to admit this. I was 42 years old before I finally found what really thrilled me, which was foreclosures. Isn't that crazy? 42 years old. And but, you know, I just knew I'm going to find it somewhere, somehow. And I did.
What part of foreclosures did you find thrilling?
I loved the toughness. I loved the complication. I loved the hard work. I did it for 10 years without a vacation, 6-7 days a week, 10 years. Finally, my wife had enough. She says, "We're going to take a vacation, whether you're coming with me or not." Okay, so my first trip to Ireland. But,
And how did you approach the business? Were you talking with people directly that were in the foreclosure? Were you at the trustee sales at this point?
No, it basically was a I was fortunate because when I became somewhat interested in foreclosures while I was still in the apartment brokerage business, because I was able to sometimes convince people to buy this apartment building if I could get the seller to carry back part of the sales price in a wraparound or an all-inclusive deed of trust. And nobody in San Diego even knew about it. I had to train an attorney down here to draft them, because in those days there was an agreement between the escrow companies and or the escrow industry and the legal field that attorneys would have to draft an all-inclusive. Now they don't. It's a form. Mm-hmm. But I actually had a boom in my business because of that. And every once in a great while, 2 years later, 3 years later, when this ex-owner's note wasn't being paid on for whatever reason, they'd call me up. Mr. Hannigan, you know, you told me I should take this part of the sales price back and just it's not performing. What do I do? And I said, well, you just foreclosed, sir. and he says, well, how do I do that? And so I had to stand there and stammer a little bit, and I was embarrassed about being embarrassed, you know. And mm-hmm. So I was going to law school at the time. I called it my night school. And so I went to the law library, and I started researching the code on foreclosures so I can give sensible answers to people when they ask me about that. And that got me intrigued. I got intrigued this thing about maybe there's another thing I can do. And so I got curious enough to where I subscribed in 1976. I subscribed to a local foreclosure notice service here in San Diego. And I thought, okay, that guy's got to know a lot about foreclosures. My God, he's got a service for it. And I found out he didn't know anything more than know where to find the recorded notice of default and notice of trustee sale and make copies and mail them out. But he didn't have the slightest idea about anything else as far as foreclosures were concerned. So
was that when they came on individual sheets and one was yellow and one was white?
Yeah, and they were stacked. I used to get fat envelopes, you know, and I was very busy buying and selling apartment houses for people at that time. And so I was getting embarrassed because I had this stack of unopened mail on my desk because I was, listing apartment properties, selling them, doing all that kind of stuff, and I couldn't get around to it. And so I said, all right. I didn't want my wife seeing all that mail on my desk when she came in once in a while to drag me off to lunch. And so I decided, because she would think it was a waste of money. So I decided to, I dumped them all in the trash can without even opening them. And then I called up the company and I said, hey, you know, you got to cancel me for a while. I just learned one very important thing with foreclosures, and that is, you need some time to do it. It doesn't happen automatically. 2 years later, I forgot about that lesson. I'm sorry to admit. And there was a new owner took over the service, and he contacted all the ex-subscribers, and he said, hey, I'm a new guy, and I got new ideas and new talents, and it's easier to get rich subscribing with my service. And I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. And within 3 days, I go, oh, God, what a stoop I was. You know, I was so upset with myself. So I called up and canceled again, and I resolved that I'm never, ever, ever going to try to get into the foreclosure game unless I can do it full time. I had to learn that lesson. And so it wasn't until 1982, so 4 years after that, that happened. And out of the blue, and you'll probably remember this, interest rates, home loan interest rates, went up to like 16-18%.
Yep.
It was a mind blower. Now, who is going to buy an apartment investment that they don't have to have and pay through the nose 16-18% interest for a loan? They just all sat on their hands and said, you know, when the industry gets its senses and comes on down to a reasonable interest rate, call me up. Well, in the meantime, what do I eat? And so I read a great book when I was 19. I helped a lady at my favorite bookstore. I thought a bookstore was a library, and I used to go there and read every damn book she had. And she asked me to help her out on a weekend, packing books and sending them back to publishers, and that's the way she paid her bill that she couldn't for the month. And for that, she said, "Ward, you can take any book you want in the place. You did so much help for me in 2 days, blah, blah, blah." And I said, I insist. And so I said, okay. And I saw this book, said The Richest Man in Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "Good choice." I go, "Wow, okay." And so I took it home that night. And at first I hated it because it used this old style English in order to make it fit the setting that it's written in. It was written, you know, a couple hundred years ago or something. I don't know.
Right, in stories.
And
form.
Yeah. And so once I got over that hang-up and got into the story, I couldn't stop. And it's the very first book I've ever read nonstop from cover to cover. Okay, and I read it. It took me all night, and about 6 o'clock in the morning, I finished it. And so, holy smokes! And there was, you know, the 10 rules of gold and all the cures for lean purse and all that kind of stuff. And I've lost some pretty good sized money in my subsequent careers and things I did. And it was all, every single time it was because I violated the 10 rules of gold, you know. I had it right there, you know. And and so now I live my life by that. I don't, you know, someone comes to me for a loan or, you know, usually a family member or something like that because supposedly I'm Daddy Warbucks or whatever. But anyways, I say, fine. First thing we got to start off is you got to read this book from cover to cover. It's called The Richest Man in
Babylon.
Richest Man in Babylon by George Clason. I used to buy them and give them to people as gifts for weddings and give them to or graduations and this and that, put the money envelope inside. And I swear just about everybody took the envelope and, set the book aside. And that's the last they ever had to do with it. I even did it with tenants because I figured after 3 years, these people probably should have gotten over whatever problems they had in buying a house and repaired their credit and should then now go out and buy. And at 3 years, I used to call them up and said, "Hey, this is Ward. Look, we got to go have breakfast Saturday morning. Let's go to a pancake house or something." And, "Why? What's the matter? I'm standing." "Nothing, nothing, nothing. You guys are fantastic. It's just I want to bring up a subject and I think you'll like it." So I talked to him, and I said, "Listen, you guys are fantastic. You pay on time. You keep my unit just absolutely squeaky clean." This was before I got into dingbats, okay?
Okay.
And I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, you know? So everything I got, I had to really hustle and work for. And you could do the same thing, and you guys got that mindset, you know, you're hard workers. And so what I like to do is have you read this book, The Richest Man of Babylon. And I told them, just go to the bookstore and get it. And I figured if I made them go get the book, that investment of time and energy would probably propel them to read the dang thing. Because when I gave them books, they wouldn't read it. And guess what? They never went to buy it. I mean, I spent
right.
an hour and a half with a breakfast. I paid the bill. And telling them how much I believed in them. And I said, "I can get rich off of anybody. You know, it doesn't have to be you. I like you guys so much. I think you need to now take the next step. You're in third grade, but you're repeating third grade over and over and over again. Get on to fourth grade, the fifth grade, and sixth grade. Keep going, you know." And they thanked me and think I was a wonderful guy, but they never would do anything. So,
Just for interest of time, probably only have time for two more questions, but one of the more important ones is there's lots of people that have taken your training, lots of people that have taken my training. Most of them don't make it. First of all, I guess, why have you made it in an industry that it's hard to make it in?
Well, see, I had nothing to lose. When I got started in this, I was kicked out of my career. I'd still probably be selling apartment houses if interest rates didn't go to 16 or 18%. I'd love to tell you I was a smart guy and I thought it through, but I didn't. It's just I was reacting to some goofy thing that happened in the market at that time. And then I said to myself, what do I do? And after diddling around for about a month, 2 months to have it be convinced that this was going to be a long-term problem, I thought, my God, foreclosures. I got all the time in the world.
Why doesn't everybody that takes training your training can make anybody successful at it? What's the difference in your opinion of what those who make it and those who don't?
It still takes, after you cut through everything and after you even study at the feet of Bruce Norris or Ward Hannigan, on and on and on, it still takes that person to do one crucial thing, and that is to put it into action.
Okay.
And nobody wants to change anything. I have to talk to myself all the time about doing something new and forcing myself to do it. We always want to say no to everything. No, 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 tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. And when you have people that come take my training and they're very successful, but they're still working because they've got themselves up on this need to have money, all right? I was a little different. Reading The Richest Man in Babylon, I bought hook, line, and sinker that I should have a cash reserve of 3 months. Actually, I did that, and I had a cash reserve of a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't bother me if I needed to go looking for a new job and this and that. And I wasn't panicked to take the first damn thing that came along and all that kind of stuff. But most people that take my training, they take it on weekends because it's the only time they get time off from this J-O-B. And so they keep tripping over the J-O-B, and they cannot afford, since they don't have a lot of confidence in themselves learning a complicated new subject. Even though Ward tells them a million times they can, and if you get stumped, give me a call and all that kind of stuff, they still don't buy it internally. And so they don't want to let this job go and burn their bridges behind them and hope they can make it in foreclosure. So I had that done for me. I had, you know,
you
the economy
were forced into it.
Rudely ripped out my. I was making good money at that time. I was living on Mount Helix, and I had a full time gardener and all this la di da stuff nonsense, but it was a job that I was bored, you know, B-O-R-E-D, bored with, out of my gourd, and foreclosures fascinated me. So when I'd had it cut off, all right. And I could afford, since I had this money saved up, I could afford to take the time it took to master a subject I knew nothing, nothing, nothing about. I thought I did. I thought I was God's gift to, you know, real estate or something. And this is just going to be one extra thing I got to learn. And I was dumbfounded when I found out I didn't know the simplest thing. And
go ahead. We've run out of time. I can tell you one thing I know for sure. Aunt May would be proud of who Ward Hannigan turned out to be. That's a fact.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing, okay? It's going to be off your theory, man. I looked for years and years and years, Bruce, because I didn't have a hero when I was growing up. I didn't have mm-hmm. that uncle, that dad, that grandpa, this and that. And so I kept reading. I read autobiographies of famous Americans, you know, the early colonial presidents and Benjamin Franklin and on and on. And it didn't dawn on me until I was actually in my 40s that the hero I was searching for was me.
Very good. Wow. You are a class man, and I'm excited that you're on a panel. Because I think what you share with people is very impactful for them. So, Ward, thanks a lot for taking time today. Okay. All right,
thanks,
Ward. Thanks. All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye.